my name is Jacob Merriman. I'm with Eric Druin. We work for the City County Planning Commission that's here in Bowling Green and covers all of Warren County and the city of Bowling Green. We've got a few questions with this podcast that we're going to talk about today to go over some items that you as a general contractor might not be aware of and some tips and some helpful guidance to hopefully keep you moving along and progressing on your projects within compliance and safety and all those good things. So my background is I'm a licensed professional engineer. I've been working in construction for over a decade. I'm also the floodplain coordinator. I also contract as well. I work in the field as well as in the office covering permits and design. And with me is Eric Druin.
Yeah, thanks, Jacob. This is Eric Druin here, and development specialist here at the Planning Commission. So I have the opportunity to review permits as they come in and help coach different size projects through what we call the comprehensive development review, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later. But my role on staff and background is with the City County Planning Commission, and just to help kind of coach different developers and contractors through the permitting process, kind of from the idea concept all the way to the finished product and construction. So that's about it for now.
Well, good. Well, we hope you learn a lot. And with that, we'll just kick it off here. And can you tell us a little bit more about what actually is the City County Planning Commission and what their function is?
Absolutely. So just in the name, City County Planning Commission, we do serve both the city and the county jurisdictions. So anywhere that you would operate in Warren County, which would include even the smaller cities of, say, Plum Springs, Oakland, Woodburn, and Bowling Green, you know, we would review those projects and talk about things that go on in that area. But City County Planning Commission operates the zoning ordinance as well as comprehensive plan for our area, as well as subdivision regulations. So we help enforce and guide those regulations through the public. The City County Planning Commission, mostly in, as far as our function, is to ensure the proper enforcement of the zoning ordinance. So which kind of leads into kind of most of our discussion today as far as what those things are. But like I said, the City County Planning Commission, and we do also report to various boards, which would be, you know, the City County Planning Commission Board, as well as the Historic Board and the Board of Adjustments, and just various other opportunities and boards that would kind of oversee the local governance of our community.
So with Planning Commission, that covers the zoning. What does zoning imply when people are looking at property or parcels?
So for zoning in our community, we are a community, and there may even be, I guess, surrounding counties or communities that may not necessarily have a zoning ordinance. And not to say that it's like a free-for-all, but Warren County and Bowling Green does operate a zoning ordinance, which would imply a specific district or use for a particular property. It can range from just agricultural use to residential to commercial business to industrial, and we even have designations like floodplain as those zoning.
So as a general contractor working in Bowling Green, Warren County, what would be some items that we should be aware of from a planning and zoning perspective?
Yeah. So as a general contractor working in these areas, it would be wise to familiarize yourself with at least the zoning ordinance, or at least know where to find those answers. And, of course, we have staff available at the Planning Commission that can assist with answering those questions. We have online GIS, which is a mapping software that can help identify properties and their zoning. And some of those things from a planning and zoning perspective would be setbacks, how far a structure needs to be from the property line, if there's various easements associated with a property. And we also, Within the City County Planning Commission, we do house the plat of record for certain lots, or actually all lots, I should say, where you can actually go on and you can either request from our office, and we do have a deed book and page number where we review and record plats for pretty much every property. If it's an older property, it might not necessarily have a boundary drawn in or dedicated, but it would have a deed associated with that property. But if you're looking for the recorded plat that shows the lot lines, easements, as far as utilities that serve that property, we can gather that information. So that's another thing that we do in our office. So not only as far as from a zoning perspective that you need to be aware of is mostly what use is allowed. So if you look up a given property and you want to determine if a certain structure or even a use is allowed, you start there and you determine, okay, my client is wanting to add an addition, or I have a client that's wanting to start a business, trying to determine that if that particular property is zoned properly for that project.
Great. So for an example, say I'm a developer and all these developers are getting prelim bids just to see where the money is up front before they do any kind of construction, and I reach out to a general contractor and say, hey, we want to put a gas station here, and it's out in the county, and can you give me a quote for it? Would it be advantageous to kind of familiarize yourself with the zoning laws and subdivision regulations? You might be able to, or could you be able to convey to the developer that, hey, there's we can't just start on this tomorrow. Like, it's going to be a process to put that there.
Sure. So for the kind of the project you're talking about specifically, it would be advantageous for the developer, or like I said, as a general contractor, maybe just to if you're familiar with the GIS system and mapping, just to locate the property, and you can do some general research by yourself, but then also to call the Planning Commission office, and you can speak to a planning staff member that can prepare a kind of a general report, or just kind of some of the guidelines as what the property is zoned for first, just to say, hey, can I put a gas station in there? There is a process where you could rezone a property. If a property is not zoned for a specific use, they can talk to you about the parameters of what is the likelihood that you could rezone a property, and if that would be successful, and if that's an option. So if you have a piece of property that's agricultural in use, then planning staff would talk to you about a rezoning process, would tell you, well, you need to rezone that based on the fact that this property is currently ag use, or maybe even be a larger lot that's single family in nature. So they may want to talk to you about some of those guidelines in that regard. So, but as far as just doing some of that research, you can call and even talk to a development staff member that can talk to you about the permitting process as far as what documents or plan-related materials that you would need to develop, whether it be a site plan or building plan, and then as far as what you would need to turn in with your permit.
So what is exactly online and available to the public? Is there a website, or is the GIS, is that on the website?
Yes, absolutely. So if you were to go to www.warrenpc.org, you should be able to find any and all development or regulations or ordinances that the City County Planning Commission has to offer. So on our website, you should be able to find the zoning ordinance, which would have several different articles that would help kind of guide your, quest for finding out what's available to do with that property. So different articles will kind of guide you through what's existing on that property. So mostly I'd say, just to kind of pinpoint, I'd say Article 4, which is the general guidelines for development districts. So it would have all the zoning criteria and classifications for a given property, or and then Article 5 is more pertaining to the use. So you have your zoning, and we actually have a zoning table, and then it would kind of go through and talk about specific use standards. So a property may be zoned commercial, but how big of a commercial building can go there, how many parking spaces you may need, if landscaping, certain landscaping requirements are needed. So like I said, Article 4 talks about the specific zoning guidelines, and then Article 5 kind of hones in more on the use specific for those zoning criteria. And that's available, and I guess kind of is available on our website. So you can go there and you can find those specific articles on that site. You can also, there's also a link to the, like I said, the mapping, the GIS software, where you can type in an address, or maybe even if you don't have an address, but you have a parcel ID, which you would get from PVA, you should be able to type that in and then locate your property. But it's a virtual map. And when you click on those parcels or those lot lines, it should be able to populate just some general characteristics, you know, acreage, even jurisdiction. Hey, or am I in the city, or am I in the county? So that way, you know which permitting agency you're needing to go through to get your permits.
So, is there anything a general contractor needs to come down to the City County Planning Commission and apply for a permit, or submit a permit, or how does that permit process work?
So the City County Planning Commission, we don't necessarily issue permits, but we are the reviewer on all permits. So there are certain things, if you have questions about if a certain project is appropriate, you know, we can answer some of those preliminary questions. But for the most part, if the use is appropriate and the zoning is appropriate for a given property, they would just need to go. If you're doing a project in the city of Bowling Green, then you'll go to Neighborhood and Community Services and apply for a building permit through the Building Division. And then likewise, if you have a project that's located outside of Bowling Green in Warren County, you'll go to the Warren County Public Works Office. And they also likewise have a building division that you would go and apply for permits through. And I think both of those agencies actually have online portals to where you can submit permits online. But if you're not as savvy through the internet and just still like to conduct business in person, by all means, you can go to those offices and turn in paperwork or talk to a kind of an office assistant that can kind of walk you through that process.
Great, great. Well, let's get into the nitty gritty here. So I'll say everything's approved for the use and all that's correct and a permit's applied for. What are some items that the City County Planning Commission is specifically reviewing that we might be made aware of or that we can help make sure we have everything included on a permit when it comes in, just to speed the process up?
Right. So on a typical permit, the first thing, you know, we'll check is we'll verify zoning, we'll verify the use, and then we'll also verify, so any property that has a zone has a certain setback. So where does the building, how many feet does the building need to be from the property lines? So we'll verify that. We'll verify if there are certain zoning criterias, that are necessary for that particular project. But also, I know something we'll talk about at some point would be binding elements. So binding elements are something that do attach themselves to certain zones, but binding elements are typically specific requirements that are attached to a property when they are rezoned. So we'll review those to verify if certain landscaping is needed, if there's a separation between the properties, and there's plants that are needed to go in a certain tree line, or if there are certain materials that have to be used for a house. So there's times when subdivisions get rezoned and they want to maintain a certain character. So those particular properties would require, that may require building materials, say brick or maybe certain types of masonry materials that have to be used on the foundation. There may be even requirements to the facades as far as forward-facing garages, or if the garages have to be oriented to the rear or the side of the building. Other specific things may be that we're looking for on a given set of plans. Again, it's just general setbacks, the orientation of the building. We'll also, if it's a commercial project in nature, then we'll verify how many parking spaces are needed. And when you get into those commercial projects that require additional parking and large size parking lots, we'll actually review what they call a landscape plan. And so for certain size parking lots, at least 5,000 square feet, they do require certain types of screening from the property lines as well as the roadway. And then if there are above that certain size threshold, then they would be required to have interior landscaping. So it's kind of like when you go to some stores in town or some, you know, various developments, you'll see those parking islands at the end of parking rows, and you'll see trees in those islands. So that actually kind of stems from some of the requirements that the Planning Commission requires.
So just so I get it straight here, so when you go to rezone a property, you have the development plan conditions, which are known as the binding elements, that gets worked out through the public input and the commission board and agreed to. And then when the contractor comes in, all those items are in place, and we're just reviewing to make sure the plans include those items. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So when development plan conditions, and again, you may also refer to those as binding elements, when a property is rezoned, a lot of the times the public input or the developer, in order to ensure that a project does go through rezoning and is successful with their rezoning process, they may want to assign development plan conditions that are in addition to the zoning ordinance regulations. So when a property does come in, they may limit a certain use or hours of operation, or they may require, if a business is saying going to be located near a neighborhood, then the neighborhood may want to say, hey, can we put in a certain style of fencing or barrier of landscaping in between these developments? And then we would be, those are types of things that we would be looking for when whenever a site plan comes in. We want to say, okay, yeah, they show where they're going to be putting their fence in, or they show that, they show the materials that are going to be necessary that they were required through development plan conditions. We may even also, and some of those other things may touch on signage. So if you have a sign that you're putting in for your business, there may be a limit as far as the height or sign face that's required in those binding elements.
So contractors may see this as a lot of red tape, but can you explain why we have these rules and regulations in place?
Yeah, So as far as why those rules are in regulation, and a lot of it is just ensuring that the planning process is upheld. So, you know, if you have a neighborhood, it's located adjacent to a commercial development, you want to ensure those developments are compatible with one another and how they flow with one another. But it's also kind of that age old, like if I live in a subdivision, what kind of protects you as a property owner from being located to maybe a more, I guess, a intrusive zoning that may be located directly next door. So it allows us as a community to look at the uses and make sure that those meet the proper distances, whether it be a life safety event, to make sure structures are properly position apart from one another, and like I said, more just character considerations, you know, as far as how we plan our city moving forward. So you have residential, commercial, industrial, or even open space for agricultural, making sure that those developments are compatible with one another.
Yeah, because I mean, we wouldn't want, you know, you wouldn't want to build a new house in a subdivision and then industrial, you know, plant comes in and right behind you and
right, exactly,
that character. Overall character of Bowling Green in general. And I think that's what makes Bowling Green a nice place to work and live in. So I know a lot of times we have a lot of industrial projects and these big commercial projects as Bowling Green continues to expand. Is there a process that we have that speeds these projects up? Or
sure. With, I guess, larger projects, there are certain thresholds that are that need to be met as far as maybe that preliminary review. So there is a process, and I'd kind of mentioned it earlier, it's called the, we may refer to it as CDR, but that stands for Comprehensive Development Review. And so the Comprehensive Development Review is a committee, and it's also a process that encompasses all of the utilities that serve a particular given property. It's also all of the local government agencies that have ordinances that govern a particular property. So those would be Planning Commission, it may be the Fire Department, it may be the Building Division, it would also be your Public Works Department. So they're looking, Public Works would be looking at that for access and roadway improvements, but they're also kind of looking to make sure that your drainage and stormwater items are taken care of and planned for properly. So within that CDR process and all of those agencies are working together, we would like to and do have a process to meet with contractors or developers on the front end of projects. So you can kind of come to this committee on the very initial stage. So say you even have a napkin drawing, say you just have an idea or a concept in place that, hey, I'd like to build, I'd like to put my business in at this particular location. But I have no idea what utilities look like in this area. Are there capacities able to serve what I need? Do I have proper electrical needs? Do I have water and sewer needs that can serve the use of what I'm prepared to do? But then you also have, like I said, the regulatory agencies. So you have the Public Works departments, whether it be city or county. As well as the fire department, as well as the Planning Commission. And we kind of get together, and we even have a weekly standing meeting where we discuss projects in their different stages. So if it's a concept, you know, we would get together and we would talk in person with all of these agencies. And you could come to that committee meeting, and we really just have an informal but formal conversation as to what you would need to do to develop that property. Those agencies have various checklists that need to be submitted. Once you're moving forward with your design of the project, and once you have certain things nailed down, and you're going through the design, you're working with an engineer or someone to help develop the site plans. That committee's there for to help consult and to help work with your client as far as what all is needed. So one of the things for these bigger commercial projects would just be kind of working through and making sure all those checklist items are met. So and then there's actually an official review process. So once those checklist items are met, your engineer, or maybe even the contractor, they would be ready to submit what they call a site development plan. And those site development plans for projects, pretty much commercial in nature. If you go to our website, there is a development threshold for all projects that do require CDR. So those particular projects would be any commercial project. So just anything commercial would have to go through this process. But then you also have multifamily. So multifamily, if you're wanting to put anything that requires anything that holds four units or more, would be required to go through CDR. Obviously anything industrial, anything of that nature, but any project also that disturbs 1 acre of ground would need to go through the CDR process. And then on the flip side, any project, and Jacob will talk about this more a little bit later, but anything that requires infrastructure improvements. So say you have an agricultural piece of property and you want to rezone that into residential and you want to start a subdivision. So this particular committee would talk about the roadway, so the infrastructure. You know, you want to basically build a roadway and you want to divide lots and you want to sell those for future construction. That would go through the CDR review.
So as a contractor, can the contractor request these meetings?
Absolutely, and would certainly encourage them to do so. And like I said, are probably as early on in the process as you feel comfortable. We review projects that or even, like I said, they're just ideas. Your client may not even have acquired the property yet. They may be going through the process, to buy the property. So they're still in their due diligence period. So a contractor can select and request a CDR meeting at it, pretty much at any stage. So they have the idea concept and really reaching out to a planning staff member or development staff member with the Planning Commission. We can talk about what that looks like. So if you're needing to rezone a property, we would direct you to the planning staff. And if those processes have already been met, then we would say, yeah, let's have a meeting. Let's talk about what you're looking at doing. And those plans really can be very rough, like I said, a napkin drawing of what you're looking at doing. And we can work with the development committee as far as what those look like to move your project forward. And I mentioned earlier that can be very early on. It can even be before your client has purchased a property. So and these meetings are confidential in nature. They're not public record. So it's something that if you're in the due diligence period, you're needing to work through what you're wanting to do on the very front end, you can kind of come to the office and we'll have an in-house meeting. And it can be closed door. It doesn't have to be open to the public for public input at this point.
And essentially a contractor can come to one of these meetings and get all the feedback from all the utility companies and the fiber companies and, basically a one-stop shop, if I'm hearing this correctly, right?
Absolutely. So you can hear from all the utilities that would serve that site. And even if the utilities are not at that site, we invite the utilities that could operate at that site. So say you need natural gas, but natural gas is a 1,000 or 2,000 feet away, then they'll be invited to attend to say, hey, what does it look like for me to bring service to this property? So if your project requires a certain utility, then we'll invite them to come and talk about what it looks like to serve that property.
Now, what if we come to the CDR meeting, you know, in this idea stage, and then as the client or whoever progresses, the idea changes? Can we come back again?
Oh, absolutely, and that happens a lot. So, as you work through projects and as you're getting bids for projects, it makes sense that certain things change. So, but kind of depending on the scope, if it's a major change, then we would say, hey, come on back. Let's look at this again. Let's make sure it doesn't affect, or there's not. It's almost like a domino effect. If I change this one thing, does it affect everything else? So, sometimes those things can just be a simple phone call, but other times it might be easier just to call up and say, hey, I've made a major change to this project. Can we talk about this again? And we're absolutely available to do that.
So I know you talked about the checklist that the agencies have and that the Planning Commission has, and those are available to everyone. Is there checklists on the contractor side specifically, or is this more for just the development in general?
So there are checklists that are available, and we have those available on our website that are, whether it be checklists for a site development plan and everything that needs to be included in that, but also the utilities have checklists as far as what needs to be submitted with those, as far as drawings and CAD files that need to be reviewed in that particular review. But there are checklists that are available to make sure that you're following those rules and procedures.
Great. Well, switching topics slightly here, you know, there's all these special zones in Bowling Green. What are the requirements when you deal with something that's in like a historical part of town, or something that's, you know, maybe by the airport or off a special overlay district? What's the process look like for those types of projects?
Right. So depending on where a property is located, a lot of times downtown, if you're working maybe to retrofit or modify an older building downtown, and it may be best just to call the office or verify through GIS if a particular building is located in a historic district. And we have planning staff members that are designated to specifically work with that. And some of those special districts, like historic district, or you mentioned an overlay district, they actually have a specific board approval that's required prior to receiving a permit. So if you are wanting to modify or even demolish a building in a historic district, you may want to talk to a historic planner on staff to talk about what the process is for that, and if there's any architectural requirements. If you're adding onto a building, what materials need to be used in order to maintain and preserve that character of that building. other areas in Bowling Green, we do have overlay districts. There are right now there are two overlay districts. We have the Lover's Lane overlay district, which if you drive down Lover's Lane, you'll notice a certain character, a certain as far as materials that are consistent in that area. But the overlay district does have to go through and be reviewed through the Design Review Board, which is one of the boards that the Planning Commission staff does report to. So, and there is a there's a certain guideline and process for that. So, a planning staff member typically like to have pre-application meetings for projects in that area. So, for Lover's Lane as well as the Cemetery Road overlay district. So, those are two particular areas in our community that have to report to the Design Review Board for character considerations.
So if I'm an exterior contractor and someone calls me and says, hey, I want you to put some siding on this house downtown, and we think it might be in a historic district just because we won the bid and the developer told us, hey, we need it done yesterday, we might not always be able to run in and start slapping, you know, vinyl siding on over this wood
right.
structure. We'd have to check and make sure the proper permits were applied and sounds like going through the Design Review Board or Historic Board or something else to make sure everything complies with the regulations.
Right, and I would definitely think it would be wise just to call and verify that those processes had been done. That way, you know, you don't want to be in a position where you're, you know, you do a lot of great work and you install some new vinyl on a building downtown or a historic building and then all of a sudden determine, wait, that's not compatible, and then have to undo everything you've done. So
in the cases of, say, it was done, what, you know, what type of compliance inspections does the Planning Commission play, and how do we what do we send out to inform the contractors of something that might not be correct?
Sure. So for every permit that's commercial in nature, the development staff, actually it's predominantly me at this point, I'll go out once a project's approved and it's permitted and constructed. We review a certificate of occupancy report that's performed by the building inspector that basically, and that kind of lets us know, hey, these projects are wrapping up, they're done, we're getting ready to go do our final walkthrough of this property to ensure that all building code has been satisfied for this particular project. And, you know, we review a report that lets us know, okay, that means they're wanting to occupy the building and they're this particular business is wanting to start. So we'll actually, as Planning Commission staff and development staff, we'll go out and we'll ensure that all of the certain items are met that match their approved development plan. So if you turn in a plan that has sidewalks, that has certain building material requirements, has landscaping requirements, we'll actually go out and we'll verify that those plans match what was constructed. And we do that, like I said, we do that for any and all commercial projects in our community. We'll go out and we'll usually try to go out and look at those prior to a certificate of occupancy. If there are deficiencies on that project, then we do develop a report and typically try to handle those by sending an email or sending a certified mail to the property owner. If we have the contractor's information, we'll copy them and just say, hey, you know, there's an area that needs some attention. So it could be that some screening or certain trees were not planted on site, or the lighting plan, it looks like there's some light trespass where lights aren't poured, installed downward and inward, or there's lights that shine into the neighbors, through the neighbor's window next door. There's certain criteria that need to be met. So we'll go out and we'll check those things to make sure that, like I said, mostly just that the plans match what was constructed.
So the Planning Commission is out there, you know, not only reviewing the plans, but then also ensuring that the items in the plan are actually constructed correctly. Do you have any tips for contractors? I know a lot of contractors or general contractors, you know, the developer, whoever hiring them, you know, it's all about the building. Get the building done as quick as possible. And the Planning Commission is more concerned with the building orientation and the material, but also more concerned with you know, outside the building footprint. So like you said, the landscaping, I know there's dumpster screenings and items like that. Is there anything that's common issues that you see or things to look out for as a contractor?
Probably the most, I know the common issue that I see is that either landscaping is in progress, you know, it's kind of the last thing that they think of. You know, they don't want to bring trucks in or bring equipment in that may damage any of those final touches. So one of the last things that we typically see on projects is that landscaping is installed, and then, as you mentioned, dumpster enclosures. So when you have a commercial property or even a multi-family property, you'll see that dumpsters are put out there, and a lot of times they're, you know, may even being used during the construction process to haul off any you know, excess material or things that were need to be kind of thrown out after construction. But but then those dumpsters are left out there. But we actually, there's a plan, and a lot of times they're outlined on the plan as far as where the final placement of the dumpster that's going to be used for that particular project, and then also that those dumpsters have to be screened on all sides. So it's, you know, it is a very common thing to say, hey, we've got, you know, 95% of your project done here, but I still see a lone dumpster in the middle of the parking lot here. So we need to make sure it's placed where it needs to go, and make sure there's screening and walls, or whether it be walls or landscaping, on all sides of that dumpster, and make sure that it's fully enclosed.
Great, great. Well, I think now we can switch over to more subdivision specifics. I'll give it to you to let you take it away.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a lot about zoning ordinance and some of these other guidelines and ordinances that our office kind of oversees, but we haven't really touched much on the subdivision requirements or subdivision regulations. What does a general contractor need to know about subdivision requirements?
So the common misconception, I think, in the community is when you think of a subdivision and subdivision regulations, you kind of automatically go towards a residential subdivision. But in our world, a subdivision is just dividing property. So there's rules and regulations on how you can divide the property and how much road frontage you need and what types of utilities need to be there to subdivide that property. But more specifically, say all that's correct and good, and we switch over to this is a new subdivision. You know, we house all the rules and regulations for, you know, how do we control the water, the drainage design, the erosion control, you know, what you do when you're working in a right of way, details on, you know, specific jobs on how you perform those jobs, whether it be grading and excavation. There's rules and do's and don'ts on that. There's, you know, how do you put down subgrade? How do you put down rock underneath the blacktop or concrete? And how do you install storm piping? All those are found in the subdivision regulations, which are online on our website, and that's kind of what we oversee and control. And when you're working, if you're a general contractor that's building a subdivision, you know, those streets need to be, anything that's intended to be public infrastructure, we inspect full time and require a bond in place to ensure that the public's getting what they're paying for and then what you're building.
And I would say, you know, you and other development staff members are out inspecting this process while it's being constructed. What are some of the common issues that the Planning Commission sees out in the field with contractors?
So a lot of times with the contractors, the biggest thing is just everybody's in a hurry. Everything needs to be done yesterday, and we understand that. But yet we need to ensure that the rules and everything's followed. More so because the taxpayers are going to take over the acceptance of these streets and the maintenance of the streets. So if anything's done improper and you know, if the design life of these structures or roadways is X amount of years, but they're failing prematurely, ultimately the taxpayer is going to have to spend more money to replace and fix these items early, and it's not good for them. So that's why we're in place, to ensure that they do the right thing and make sure that and more. So on the common issues that we see is a big thing now is sidewalk. So we have local rules and regulations, and we also have to follow the state and federal rules. So sidewalk is governed by ADA requirements. So there's specific design requirements where, you know, the cross slope on your sidewalk can't be more than 2% or a quarter inch per foot. They have to be 5 foot wide on a subdivision, not 4 foot. There's requirements on your handicap ramps and placement of those items. In the city specifically, they require 6 inches of concrete through the driveway. In the county, you can still do just four. But all those things we look at and can check, and you can always call us. Some other items we always have problems with is we understand it's wet sometimes and you got to keep moving, but there's measures you can put in place to keep that mud out of the street, and you know, got to think about your neighbors sometime, and you know, not just what your site working on your site and creating a mess, and we get calls and complaints, and we got to make sure we're cleaning it up if we're making a mess. Another problem we see is damage to existing utilities. So maybe you called in your 811 or your locate, but they don't locate the storm sewer, or Warren County Water doesn't use the 811. So you got to call them specifically. A lot of our subcontractors will damage utilities and may not even know they damage. So we camera all the storm pipe, and a lot of times when we're camering the storm pipe, we'll see, hey, it got bored through, or hey, it got damage when they put the water line extension in or something, and damage is going to happen. Just call us and we'll help you figure out how to repair it and who to get a hold to. And I'd say lastly, the biggest thing is just being in Bowling Green and this car's topography is sinkholes. Sinkholes are a big problem in Bowling Green. They don't have to be a problem if they're repaired correctly. Some guys just don't. You know, they haven't messed with them, especially if you're from out of state. You may have never even seen a sinkhole. So those are big items to look for.
So you mentioned sinkholes, and that's obviously something we hear a lot about living in this area. How are sinkholes repaired?
So contrary to what most people think, would just, you know, I've got some people is, oh, we hit a sinkhole, we're just going to fill it full of concrete and make it disappear or cover it up with dirt and it'll go away. And there's a lot more to a sinkhole than just covering up. That may work temporarily, but if you stop that sinkhole from doing its job, because essentially it's draining the water, because we don't have ditches or creeks here. Most of our water just goes underground into the car system. If you improperly repair it or fix it or cover it up, a lot of times it just opens up again where it was at originally, or just moves over several feet and falls out again. This could be highly problematic if you had one under your house or before you built and you just covered it up, and then it's just going to move and say it comes in right underneath the foundation. Then it's very costly to fix and could even lose a structure or roadway or whatever you're building there. So it's always advantageous to fix them properly on the front end. Nobody likes them. They sometimes can be costly, but always better to fix them on the front end, and it'll save you money down the road. And how exactly you fix them depends on where they're at, what is going above it. Typically, I'll speak more for just the roadway infrastructure and drainage basins. If something's under the roadway, essentially you just kind of want to fix them as an inverted filter plug. What that means is you dig down to the solid rock, find where that water is going into the cave system or the karst topography, and basically filter fabric, some big rock, smaller rock, and then depending on how deep it is, rock all the way to the subgrade or compacted material above that fabric and rock, and essentially just building a bridge. But you still want that water to drain through, you just don't want the material to go with the water. So that's the basis of it. If it's in a drainage basin, maybe you want to use it as drainage. So then we would just take it all the way up with rock and let that water slowly drain through and leave the area, rather than take that material. And when you lose materials, that's when you get the settlement and you get failures, whether it be under the roadway or under a structure. And if you're talking more industrial or commercial or something in that nature, then I'd always recommend getting with an engineer and designing some geotech parameters on how that needs to be repaired, just to satisfy the bearing pressures or whatever's needed for the site design in general, what's going above it.
One of the other things that we have a lot in this area, obviously since we have a river that runs through our community, but we also have smaller creeks and tributaries that also run through this area, but we deal a lot with floodplains. Can you tell me a little bit about working in and around floodplains?
Yeah, so floodplains are a different animal. Nationally, if anybody's ever been to the beach, you know that everything down there is built in a flood zone. Here, since we only have a couple rivers and creeks, we have a lot of land. The city and the county long ago just decided we're not going to build anything in the floodplain, with just some minor exceptions like parks and natural features that we can use in the floodplain. But if anything is in the floodplain boundary, which can be found through FEMA's website or it's even on our GIS website, we do not allow anything to be built in the floodplain, no structures. Sometimes that's a headache, but there is a way to resolve that or get around the working in the floodplain, and that's by hiring an engineer and removing the property from the floodplain. So when you're dealing with floodplain, there's floodplain and the floodway. The floodway is the actual channel that the water runs through, and then the floodplain is, you know, if we get a big storm or a couple big storms and that channel increases in width, that's the actual floodplain, and you're mostly just dealing with volume. So it's a numbers game. Say you want to build a structure and it adjoins or encompasses some of the floodplain, you can always hire an engineer. Engineer will kind of guide you through those steps to maybe it's digging a pond to offset the volume and filling in the area where you want to put your structure. And essentially that's, it does slow down the process a little bit because that grade work has to be done up front before any permits are pulled. And there's state and local permits for working in the floodplain. Then the work has to be done, as-built submitted to the state. And once FEMA removes that property out of the floodplain, then we can go ahead with our, kind of our CDR process where we get everything going for the building or the site and run through those items on that side. But just in general, don't work in the floodplain. It's a headache. I think as Bowling Green continues to grow more and more in the future, we'll see more and more of that, and also updating the maps. But it's always better to be out of the floodplain. And then another item that people don't know about is if it's an existing structure and say you're hired to go in and remodel the structure and it is in the floodplain, because it was built prior to our ordinances, if your remodel work is more than 50% of the value of the structure, the house, then it has to come in full compliance with the codes. And that's a FEMA rule. We enforce it, but that's not our rule. That's the federal rule. And so total compliance is removing it from the floodplain. So you'd have to go back to the engineer and get some math worked out on that side before you get started on the remodel work. And we'll check you and guide that. You can always call us, come down to our office, or even if you hire your engineer, he can direct you to the right place and get you sped up as possible. I think our office in general is, we are very development friendly here in Bowling Green, and so we want to push your project just as fast as you want to, and essentially that's why we created the CDR to push these projects through and bring everybody to the table to solve any potential problems up front to expedite what you're trying to achieve. And then as a contractor, a general contractor, we have these compliance checks and inspectors on staff that'll work with you, and I tell everybody I'm a free engineer. If you call me, I don't charge you. If you call a local engineer or out-of-state engineer, they're probably going to charge you. So you can always run stuff by me if it's in my territory or my jurisdiction, and and anybody on our staff and really the city and the county together both have engineers on staff that'll help you if you need it. That's what we're here for.
Good deal. So I guess we're kind of wrapping up today. As you said, you know, really the staff is here to help guide projects through the process. You know, understand that it can seem kind of daunting if you're a new contractor starting off, or if you're just kind of getting started in the development world of construction. It may seem like a lot of red tape, a lot of rules and regulations that you have to jump through. But for those of us that work in and through it every day, we know how to streamline this process and have hopefully developed a process that is streamlined and can help development members in our community navigate processes. Because really what this is all here for is to help developers on the front end be able to see the project scope and to see it as a whole and help guide them through that. So the development team, especially with the Planning Commission as well as other sister agencies that we work with, we're here to help those that are interested in developing and making our community better, navigate those processes and procedure to make sure that we have a good product. So
That's great. I know lastly we'll just touch a little bit on safety. It's one of those big things everybody talks about but needs to be implemented to be correctly. Most of the time on the safety side, I see just people are just in a hurry and take for granted some of the things that they're complacent with, whether it's working in a trench and not having the right safety or working above the ground and not having the right safety. We do want everybody to come to work and have a good job and then also make it home at the end of the day the same way or better when they showed up. So just wanted to touch on that before we ended. And then also wanted to talk about some of the exciting things coming up that the Planning Commission is working on. And that's really, we're really trying to jump into the future working with GIS. Right now we're currently building a GIS model program, if you will, that's going to house all of these developments. That way, anybody and everybody can, get on our GIS and see what's coming, what's been approved, and where the trends are, and what to look for and what to look out for. I think our main goal is just being more transparent. Government agencies have that issue sometimes, and we want to everything we have that's available to the public, we want to put out there just to better inform the community and as a community in whole, make better decisions as we continue to grow. I know traffic is worse and worse, and infrastructure is there's issues there. So look out for that coming soon on the GIS side, just to help better inform everybody and hopefully guide you through the process. And as always, just give us a call or a shout or email or stop by if you have any questions, and we'll get you pointed in the right direction.